This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today, Season 3, Episode 9, I sit down and chat to Andy Buchanan. Andy is an Australian representative in the 2022 Commonwealth Games in the marathon, and he's now the 7th fastest Australian marathoner of all time, after running a 208.58 in the 2024 Hamburg Marathon. Of course, considering such an amazing time, Andy's intention at Hamburg was to obtain an Olympic qualifying time in the event. But unfortunately, it was not to be. He missed the time by 48 seconds, so close, yet so far now from an Olympic starting spot this year. Still a massive PB for Andy. He's such an optimist when it comes to chatting all things running moving forward, particularly with not only his resilient mindset, but the willingness to engage with a personal sports psychologist. Subsequently, Andy and I talk all things Hamburg, Commonwealth Games, the marathon in Australia, the recent running boom, and all things regarding his psychologist and psychology experience. I hope you enjoy. Welcome, Andy Buchanan, to the Local Legends in Running podcast.
Nah, thanks, Ollie. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to chatting all things running.
Great, mate. About an hour ago, I told you I was struggling to get my kids down, a four-month-old and a three-year-old, but we're here. It's Saturday night, 11th of May, 8:04 o'clock tonight. We planned for 7 p.m. start, but we're here. We're ready to go, and I'm looking forward to this very much so. And I guess a talking point will be the recent marathon of yours. We can call you a 208 man now, can't we? Even though it's slightly under 209, 208.58.
Yeah, I actually, from marathons, I don't remember too much, but one of the thoughts I've thought a lot of, and I still remember quite well, is in Hamburg, they have this red carpet for probably 100 meters. It feels like 1,000 meters, but they've got it for about 100 meters. And I looked at my watch as I was about to finish, and it was 208.30 or something like that. I can't remember exactly. And I was like, come on, I've got to finish here, because 208.58 or whatever it is sounds so much better than 209.5 or something like that. So that was, I had a fair bit of motivation to go to the arms that last 100 to try and get under that 209. So we don't talk seconds when we talk marathon PBs. So yeah, 208 sounds a lot better.
Yeah, us runners like to round down, but it's kind of a bittersweet conversation, this, isn't it? Because a huge PB from all accounts that I'm reading, but also roughly about 50 seconds away from that Olympic qualifier too. So where do you sort of stand there in terms of the Olympics, but then also that sense of a great achievement, a PB?
Yeah, bittersweet's probably the best way to describe it. So as soon as I crossed the line, I was disappointed, which sounds stupid, but I dreamt of the Olympics for most of the year. I'd planned to go to Fukuoka in November to run the time, got injured, and then Hamburg kind of was the last crack. So I'd been thinking about that time for a while, and I think it's always good to dream big, and it's like I started the race with all the hope that if everything went well, I could be going to the Olympics. And then I knew that when I finished, there was pretty much no chance. So I was pretty disappointed when I first finished. And then I was kind of like, oh, like it's still a PB and you still got to enjoy these moments. And I think as I'm getting more removed from race day, I think I'm feeling better and better about it. But yeah, it's still a little bit bittersweet at the moment, because they're dropping the standard. Like I think for world champs next year, it's 207, which means by the time LA Olympics comes around, it could be low 207 or high 206, which is just like it's just crazy to think it's that fast. So it's kind of like, was this my one opportunity? Like the Olympics is so hard to make in the first place. It's only every 4 years. So yeah, it's still a little bit bittersweet. It's but when I first started running, I never thought I'd be in the same conversation as possibly making the Olympics. So it's, yeah, I've just got to remember that. So.
Yeah, seventh fastest of all time. Your names on the list are Brett Robinson, Pat Tiernan, Rob DiCostella, Steve Montaghetti, Derek Clayton, and Liam Adams. I think I've got that right, haven't I? Who are ahead of you? You're amongst those guys now. And was it only a couple of years ago now, the Commonwealth Games, where I think you'd run about a 2:15-ish from memory?
Yeah, so that is the list, and it's I don't know, the list is going to look very different in 5 years' time, I think. Like you look at the female side of things and how much that's changed, and I think the male side is just a few years behind. So I don't think it'll be too long with advancements in technology, that kind of stuff, that top 10 list will be all newer guys, I think, and all that kind of stuff. So and I like that's the thing, I've only done 4 marathons, so yeah, Comm Games. It was a bit of a tactical race, a little bit of a slow start, but yeah, my first was Hamburg the year before where I ran 2:12. So I've kind of if you remove that Comm Games race, it was 2:12, 2:10, then 2:08, pretty much. So yeah, I'm happy with that progression.
No, it sounds good. And if I've read it correctly too, you're about 33. So surely, the next Olympics 4 years away, and any event and progression is very much still on the card. So looking forward to following that journey moving forward. But let's move ahead, and we may come back to that and touch on that with the running story today to get to know you a little bit more, Andy. And we spoke off air, something we do share in common, obviously, is running, but the other one is teaching. So teaching is a profession. So happy to talk about your teaching side of things. You're Bendigo based down in Victoria, but what about any interests, hobbies? I don't believe you've got children, but anything to do with family life?
Yeah, thankfully no, well, not thankfully, but no children at the moment that are hard work to get to bed and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I teach, I work 0.6. I don't work full time, but I work 0.6 there, which is a good amount, and I'm lucky the school really support me with my endeavors for running. So that's I'm really lucky there. And then I also do a little bit of coaching on the side, so online run coaching with Run to PB, which is really good. I like doing that. I coach about 40 athletes online, which keeps me pretty busy. And then I'm in the process of opening a running store here in Bendigo. So my life involves a lot of running, which is I quite like that. Outside of running, what do I do? Probably not much. Just try and recover. Hence me on a Saturday night, being free to do this podcast. But yeah, not really too much else other than that.
Yes, if we delve into that a little bit, is the part-time teaching in order to coach? And obviously now with the shop, is that sort of how that fits into the part-time teaching?
Yeah, so I've been teaching for about 12 years now. Started full time, and then I was looking for ways that I could, I suppose, work smarter, not harder. So I cut back on my teaching. I started doing a little bit of online coaching, and I was working full time, and I went to 0.8, which is one day off a week. And then now I'm kind of like down to 0.6, which is 2 days off a week. And as that teaching load's decreased, I've kind of picked up more coaching. And that kind of, I like the coaching because it's really flexible. I can kind of do it wherever I am, and all that kind of stuff. So it's, at the moment, it's a nice balance.
Yeah, great. Has that helped with your running as well? Was it a running decision to go back with the work?
Yeah, 100%. That's where it all kind of stemmed from, my running. And I was comparing myself to a lot of my competitors, and I was like, what advantage do they have? And it was essentially just they could run it at 9:30 every day, and they, all that kind of stuff. So it was, yeah, purely based on aiding my running and just giving me a bit more time during the day to get good quality running in, but then also recovering before my double in the afternoon or whatever is on the schedule.
Yeah, good, good. So just tell us about this run to PB, mate, because most of, as we discussed off air, my listeners are Brisbane based, but I do get many around Australia, if not around the world. But how does that work? Have you got athletes all over this country, Australia?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So it's, I've got a lot of people here in Bendigo that I coach online, but I see in person. But then I've got a few guys in South Africa, a few in America, a few in New Zealand, and yeah, all over Australia. So it's, we use a program called Final Surge, which is great. Technology these days, it's so easy to jump on Zoom, have a chat. So yeah, it's essentially wherever you're from, you can be coached. And I have a lot of guys and girls that are kind of marathon focused, which is really good. I enjoy that. But then I've also got a lot of people that are doing 3K or 5K, or even some juniors that do quite well at nationals. So a real spread, and it's something I enjoy. Like when I'm pretty focused on a race, I quite like actually spending an hour or two knocking out programs and forgetting about my own running for a while.
Yeah, excellent. Are there any familiar names to listeners amongst the coaches there for Run to PB? How many coaches do you have?
Yeah, there's, I actually, when I first signed up, I was the very first coach, and now there's, there's probably 15. So probably the most familiar would be Brady. So Brady Trelfall, he's one of the part owners, and he's a coach there as well. Matty Heiner, who's an Olympian. Who else? You put me on the spot here a little bit. mostly there's a lot of Victorians actually. So we've got quite a big following down here in Victoria.
Right. Hey, tell us about this shop. So what's the intention moving forward with the shop and how that's going to fit into your week?
Yeah, so it's I love Bendigo and I run a lot in Bendigo, and Bendigo doesn't have a run specialty store. And I think, I don't know if there's, I'm guessing there's a few up near you, and there's such
not
a
too
critical
many.
part of a running.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, what was that?
Yeah, not too many up here, but yeah, you go ahead.
Okay, yeah. And I think they're so important now that there's so many good shoes out there and people just buy blindly online. So we've, myself and two others are in the process of opening this shop, and yeah, it's about 2 weeks, 2 weeks off from opening. So it's called Verve Running. I'm not sure how it's going to fit into the week just yet, but we'll see how that goes. We're going to have it set up so that us owners aren't in the store every day. So yeah, I'll sneak in hopefully a few times a week, and it'll be good fun because I quite like chatting running. So it's yeah, it's been a good challenge so far.
Yeah, good, good. Be a diverse week then for you, hey? Teaching, coaching, retail. Not
Yeah.
much else to fit
Yeah.
in, right?
No, not really. But a lot of running. So all of them have in common is running, which is good and lucky. I love it.
Yeah, well, let's get to running and the PBs. I'd love to run through, as I do for most guests, your PBs for all events. I know you probably don't want me to read out the 8 and 1500 as much as the others, because it seems like, as we've obviously spoken about, and I think most of the running world who follow elite running have heard of your marathon ability. Let's get down to the 800. Do you recall your time for your PB for the 800, which was 6 years ago?
Oh, I'm really bad with PBs. I probably couldn't tell you many of them. So I'm glad that you've got to write them down. Not because I'm not proud of them. I don't know. I probably don't put as much emphasis on them as other people do. So I want to guess 154 or 153?
Yeah, 154-16, Sacramento, USA, 2018.
Oh, so this is funny. That's actually not me. So this is a different Andy Buchanan.
Is it?
Yes, because that was actually ran on an indoor track.
Is it? So that's hilarious. So this Andy Buchanan is 345, 1500 meter. That's not you either.
No, that's me.
That is you.
No, that is me.
Mile, 409.
So I've ran that. Yeah, that's mine. So this guy is an American. I think he's done a pretty good 200. It's like 26 or something like that. And it, like it's on my idol on my World Athletics profile. But I think he's got the better end of the stick because I've got his 200 and 600 or 800 time, whereas he's now got my 15 3K, 5K, half 10, like marathon time. So but yeah, I think I ran mine at Melbourne Uni, and I think it was about the same time. I'm not really too sure, but it's around that.
Yeah, let's run through them and check them, hey? So as we mentioned, 345 and 409 for the 1500 and a mile respectively. 3,755, Box Hill that was 3 years ago. 5,1342,
yep,
right. 2021. Again, Box Hill just before that actually that year. 10,000, and that's on the track when we say 10,000 usually. 28,26. Again, mate, you like Box Hill, that's Box Hill again. And 10K yep. Road, obviously Box Hill hosts a lot of fast events through the calendar. 29.06 on the road at Hobart. So was that part, what runs there at Hobart? Was that part of the marathon or?
Could have been Run the Bridge, maybe.
Yeah.
That's in Hobart. I think that's one of the only fun runs I've done there. But yeah, it's one of those things where I'm surprised I haven't run faster than on the road, but often on the road, it's not really time focused. You get in a race, gets a bit tactical in a bunch, that kind of thing. So it's I'd rather win the or try and win the race rather than run a fast time there. So
yeah, true. And Adelaide, I think that's the 12K that is in Adelaide, the City to
yep.
Bay, is that what they call it? City to Bay, 36.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
8. And a fair while ago now, 7 years ago, that one and the 15K in a local to you, Ballarat. 44.18, which leads us to, I believe you won this half marathon at in Japan. You might need to sort of correct me on pronunciation. I'm going to have a crack here. Tachi Tachikawa.
I've got no idea. So we'll just roll with that. I think that sounds about right.
62.50, which is a remarkable time. That's got to be up there, what, close to the top 10 all-time Australian, wouldn't it? 102.50?
I don't think so. There's a lot of Australians that have ran 62 or
yeah.
under
Yeah.
Because there's so many, like, and it's, that's probably my looking through. That's definitely my weakest PB. And like, it doesn't line up with my marathon or my 10K time. So that's probably one of the ones I'm really keen to have a crack at this year, hopefully.
Yeah. And 5 years ago at that time. And then of course the marathon, only within the last, that's almost 2 weeks, isn't it, from Hamburg, Andy?
Yes. Yeah, it would be 2 weeks. Forgetting about time zones, but 2 weeks tomorrow.
Yeah, which, as we mentioned, puts you at seventh fastest all-time Australian. And would that rank the highest then, therefore looking back on those PBs, surely?
Yeah. Yeah, quite easily.
Yeah, so yeah, you must be proud of those efforts, considering that's that near miss to that Olympic qualifier still 2 weeks later.
Yeah, it's as I said, bittersweet. But I think as time goes on, I'll be more comfortable with where I was at, and it's still a really big jump, so I can't complain too much.
Righto, let's head into the running story then of Andy Buchanan, because it's always interesting hearing the backgrounds of runners, and my recollection of what I've heard about you, and I could be wrong, is that you weren't right up the top there going through high school. But I'd love to hear, sort of even before primary school, parental influence, siblings influence, primary school, high school, and then that sort of early adulthood, where running took you at that point of your life.
Yeah, so I was pretty lucky. I grew up with both my parents are marathon runners, so I thought that was pretty standard that you'd go to Gold Coast, you'd go to Adelaide, you'd go to Perth, Sydney, Melbourne, Hobart, and you'd do the marathon, and then you'd you'd have a bit of a holiday after it. And all these marathons seemed to line up pretty well with school holidays. So that was my normal kind of upbringing, really. And I thought that's what normal families did, which took me a while to realize that both my parents weren't really that normal. So that was my upbringing. I thought that was pretty, yeah, just standard. I was involved in a local club run, sorry, club here in Bendigo, a running club, which I, yeah, early primary school, I didn't mind going to, but being honest, I probably preferred the afternoon tea more than the actual running part. So there was some really good snacks, really good cakes. So I enjoyed that. That was every Saturday. I actually didn't start training till I was 16, 17. So before that, I'd just kind of go for the odd run here and there, like maybe once or twice a week. I'll do this club run on the weekends, and that was it. I through primary school, like I made it through the States and all that, but I wouldn't train. And then it'll just kind of like the next year would roll around and you'd go all right again. And I don't know, probably didn't really realize that I was talented till high school, and went pretty well at some state cross country meets. I did zero running on the track. I didn't really find it that interesting. Thought it was pretty boring. And then a few of my friends had started being coached by this local coach, Terry Hicks. They're like, "Oh, you should come down." So I went down and yeah, started getting coached by him, where I was doing 800s and 1500s, which was actually really good. It was good to work on my speed because that's probably something that I naturally lacked. Even then, this is like, yeah, 16, 17, year 10, year 11, I was probably running 3 days a week maybe. And then what was it? My first nationals was when I was 19, so under 20, and I got absolutely flogged. I kind of would have finished 70th out of about 80. So yeah, definitely. But looking back at that race, I couldn't tell you any of those kids that I raced that are still running. So it's quite funny looking back and seeing these kids that thought it was the be all and end all to be doing really well in under 20s, and they just flogged themselves, and yeah, they're no longer in the sport. So which is, yeah, a little bit sad to see, but I think we see that so often with juniors and with parents. They think it's so important to get these early results rather than be a lifelong athlete of the sport. I started getting coached by Scott Westcott when I was, I think I was second or third year uni. Started running with Brady a little bit more, started to take my running a little bit more seriously, but I was still definitely enjoying the Tuesday nights, which were the uni nights here in Bendigo.
Tuesday. Gee, that's
Definitely.
early in the week.
A really great way to ruin your whole week, actually, going out on a Tuesday night. So yeah, even through uni, I definitely wasn't taking running seriously. And then yeah, Scott kind of got me working a little bit harder, got me running a little bit more, and that was probably, yeah, 12, 13 years ago. And I finished uni and started working full time, probably had a better routine. And yeah, and that's where kind of some of my PBs were 3 or 4 years after that. So yeah, a little bit different to most people. Definitely influenced through my parents. They're the main influence with me, and just some friends that I had. A really good running culture here in Bendigo. It's very similar to Ballarat in that we're surrounded by bushland, heaps of places to run. But yeah, I wouldn't change it at all, and I think I've still got a lot of years of improvement because I didn't really start training till I was a fair bit later. Whereas you compare biological age, say, compared to training age for a lot of people my age, and their training age might be 15 or 16, whereas for me it's a lot less than that. So I think I can keep improving and haven't had that many injuries. So yeah, I wouldn't change a thing.
And if we touch on mileage then, Andy, so, and you talk about this age of starting and commencing running, was the mileage quite low too back then, or did you sort of go straight into the high mileage, particularly upon leaving school?
Nah, so I reckon with my first coach, I wouldn't have been doing 20K a week. Like, we used to do some pretty hard track sessions, but they were very short. And we used to do a long run of 10K, which was, yeah, so very, very low mileage. When I first started getting coached by Scotty, he likes a bit of mileage, and he probably didn't. It took us both a while to realize such a low base I was coming from, because I got these just niggling issues, and I struggled for probably 6 months just adjusting to running. I can't remember what it was. It was probably only 100K a week. And I found that quite hard when I first started with Scott. But yeah, we stuck at it and just kind of slowed things down a little bit and yeah, gradually progressed from there. But I haven't been a big mileage person. Like the last few years I kind of have, but yeah, to start with it was very low, which I think was a good thing.
Yeah, so when would you have hit, say, 100 kilometers per week in mileage? Would that have been your early 20s then?
Yeah, maybe early 20s, maybe 22, 23, just as I was getting close to finishing uni. And then from there, we kind of progressed year by year, probably by 10 or 20 Ks a week. And I reckon by kind of 25, I was, yeah, probably up to about 140. And that's when I was running some of those 1500 and probably 5K PBs, I'd say.
Yeah, right. And now, Andy, you and I aren't too different in age, actually. I've got a few years on you, but my recollection back then is quite scarce in terms of, like, I can't recall wearing a watch as an athlete running back then. I cannot at all remember the shoes that were on my feet. Like, do you have memories of those sort of things now, which are so different for runners starting to run for the first time and this day and age with technology and footwear?
Yeah, it was definitely very different. There was no Strava, which was quite strange to think that. And then I remember having a Garmin. I feel like it was a Garmin 305 Forerunner, which was massive. And yeah, I used to use that. But I first started with a stop, like it was literally just a stopwatch. And you wouldn't speak of loops in K's. You'd just say, oh, that's the 40-minute loop, because that's all you knew. So that was different. I remember getting my first pair of Nike Mutombo spikes, and they were like the lightest thing ever, and they were like the super shoe back then, and people just couldn't believe how light they were. They had this hole in the back, which everyone's like, wow, this is crazy. So that's definitely a shoe I remember, just because it felt so fast. But yeah, times have definitely changed, and these younger generation don't realize what it was like to do a session around the track, and the next day your calves are the thing that hurt. Whereas these days with the super shoes and the spikes that are so good, it's you don't have those DOMs, so it is quite different.
Yeah, and we'll get to super shoes and their effect, I think, in the marathon shortly. But before we get there, as a Queenslander and a runner, I'm very envious of the cross-country scene down there in Victoria. I want to know, like, in school too, is a school cross-country scene also large, leading into the cross-countries and open runner being a big thing down there? It really is a non-event compared to road running up here in Queensland.
Yeah, cross-country is big, and it's every school does it, and that flows through into AV, so Athletics Victoria. But probably the biggest thing down here are the clubs. That's what really drives it. And every weekend, like we had a cross country today. I wasn't there, but like the Bats finished second, which is big for us. We're in the Premier Division. We didn't go that well at Gels Park because a few of our runners were doing different marathons around the world. But AV do a great job in promoting and putting on really good events, and then the clubs really get quite competitive with it, which is good. And like we've run the Premier Division, like the Bendigo team, the last 2 years. So we've kind of got a bit of a target on our head, and there's been a few words said between different clubs the last few weeks, which is great. Like I love it, and it's funny. A lot of people don't get why I run these cross country races and why I like I'll do 7 or 8 of them a year, and it's because I'm so invested in the team, and it's really good fun to run for something that's not just yourself. Running is very individual, and I quite like the fact that even when it's not a relay event, it's an individual race, but your result counts towards the team's result. So it's a great competition, and I'd be pretty lost without it, to be honest with you. So it really comes from the clubs, and we're very lucky that AV have such a good setup, and they really invest a lot of time into the races. So
yeah, it gets a lot of airtime on probably Australia's biggest running podcast. That's Inside Running with Brady Trelawney leading the way there. I know he's very passionate about it, and I hear a lot about it from up here in Queensland about it, that scene. It'd just be remarkable, I think, to have it up here. Definitely something different about being in a team and a relay or any kind of group environment, I think, for running. But I'd like to almost fast forward to the Commonwealth Games, Andy, because I did watch that on TV a couple of, that was in 2022, wasn't it? Birmingham, have I got that correct?
Yes.
It's
yep
a little
yep
bit of
yep.
a blur through COVID. I remember trying to find some footage of that very quickly to observe you in that race, and just wanted to sort of hear from your experience firsthand about not just the run, but how your experience was in general over there in Birmingham.
Yeah, it was a strange situation for me because I'd ran a marathon earlier that year, which was Hamburg. That was my first one, and then qualified for Com Games, and it was only my second marathon. So I was kind of like standing on the start line, like pretty nervous. One, because it's the Com Games, and two, I was like, I don't know if I'm. Did I just fluke that first marathon? Like, I don't know this at all, and so I was pretty nervous. It was a lot of fun. I loved it. Like running, representing your country was awesome. And I knew nothing about the marathon. So I definitely learned a fair bit that day. Had a really great, like we went to St. Moritz, like an altitude training camp with all the marathon team. And it was awesome. I've got such good memories of that whole kind of, ended up nearly being 2 months by the time, by the time I got home. And then after my marathon, like we were in the first few days, I remember hanging around the village and going out watching a few different sports. And I was at the athletics the night that Ollie Hall won the 1500, which was just something I'll never forget. And I remember coming back and I was sitting on, there was this big green near where all the Australians were staying. I was eating some pizza, just kind of enjoying it. And then like Ollie kind of walked past and I remember just running down, giving him a massive hug, and it was just, something I'll never forget. So that was pretty iconic. But the whole experience was really cool, actually. And it was pretty, like, I don't actually think the Com Games will ever make a comeback after what Victoria kind of did to them. So it's, I was really, really grateful that I could sneak that in before they kind of fell apart.
Yeah, from memory, it's just you and Liam Adams as Australians in that race, wasn't it? And he headed out super quickly. I think he was well under at that point in time the Australian record pace. And as most races are sort of on TV provided footage of that front or lead pack or runner, he was featuring a bit for Australia. They'd go back to you at times, but you're sort of that forgotten man to a degree through the race. But it seemed like you'd run super consistently. Was that how it sort of ended? You know, that the consistency was quite evident in your run.
Yeah, it was. And I'm still not sure why Liam went out so hard. I think it played a part in him finishing fourth, which is a little bit unfortunate. But no, I think I'm quite good at measuring my effort. And I'm probably, if anything, a little bit conservative, which I think you need for a marathon. And every time I've run a marathon, I've got to 30K and thought, all right, this is where the race starts. And whereas I think too many people get to 30K and their race is finishing and they're just slowing down. So I think having that mentality really helps. And I remember sitting with the group till pretty much 30K. We had a pretty big chase pack. And then I, just kind of took off. I was feeling pretty good. Had an English guy that I could, he kind of followed me and we worked together. I think we ran the last 10K pretty fast. So it was a nice way to run it. And there was, it was cool. There was a lot of supporters out on the streets that day. And like, it's still cool to think when people yell out, like, go Australia, they were like cheering for you. Like that took me, it still take, like, I still can't get my head around that. So that's something pretty cool to look back on.
And it's a unique thing too, the Commonwealth Games. Well, firstly, because it is a Commonwealth Games, but secondly, it's a really small group of runners that are actually competing in the marathon itself. Is that a very different feel to these bigger fun runs?
Yeah, it's such a different feel. And standing on the start line, and there might have been 16 or 18 runners, and it's just like, what? Like, this is weird. And you've got quite good Kenyans. Then you've got other runners from India and that kind of stuff that are 220 runners, and it's a real mixed bag. So it was quite a different experience. And I'm used to doing doing marathons where there's pacemakers, you know exactly what the group's going to do. Whereas this was, yeah, I had no idea. So it was definitely a really cool experience.
Yeah, excellent. Hey, let's move forward into the marathon actually as we speak about it. And I mean more so in terms of the Australian marathon and the runners we have at the moment who are absolutely killing it. And we have alluded to it, haven't we, at the beginning of the conversation. But I'd like to just bring up a few facts before we get in there because we've got Brett Robinson in more recent times, Pat Tienen and Liam Adams and yourself breaking. Well, firstly, Brett breaking Rob Dixdale's record from 1986, only 2 years ago. So it just seemed like there was such a long time in the marathon for runners to really, you know, find their way. And sub 10 has been a bit of a spoken about barrier. It's a bit of an arbitrary number, 2:10. But it seems like, you know, once, I think it was Brett first, wasn't it? Yeah, in 22 had gone under, then three more followed. And now we've got, and that's the males, that is. If I then quickly go to the women, and I always forget, there's just so many, Sinead Diver, Ben Gregson in more recent times, Lisa Waitman, and women, as most followers and listeners would know about on podcasts, for any female running conversations, the age of them, a lot of them have their children too. Jess Denson's in there, Eloise Wellings, Ellie Pashley too in more recent times, and you know, Benita Willis, 2006. She was the previous record holder, Chicago, USA, almost 20 years ago. So in your mind, this is a pretty big question. Maybe you thought about it. What do you think's happened in the last like sort of 5 to 7 years? We're training to lead to that.
There's a few things. I think it's hard to go past like advancements in technology. I was running pre-Super Shoes, and I think it's a massive difference. And it's even a massive difference in the training you can do for the 8, 10 weeks, however long the marathon build is, because you're just not smashing your legs as much. So that helps. I could not imagine running a marathon in those old flats and feeling what the last 10K feel like. So I think that's a big change. I think, nutrition has evolved a lot, and we, especially us Australians, we've got some really, really good dietitians, and I think they've gotten better at their processes and procedures. And I know a lot of people use the same dietitian, and I think that really heavy carb load and then taking on essentially as many carbs as you can during the race has played a big part. And then it's a bit like the Bannister effect of when he ran sub 4, all of a sudden there was like 2, 3 others that did it, because the most powerful thing in your body is your mind, I believe. And if you think you can do it, you're a long way to doing it. And like, I have a lot of respect for Brett, because him breaking that record, that was so much more. Like if Pat goes and runs, say, a minute faster, I still think Brett's run is more impressive given he was the first one to do it. And because that was hanging over his head for so long. And everyone thought, oh yeah, he's ran sub 60 for the half. It's just a matter of time. But then to actually do it on race day and do something that no one's done before, I think he's really impressive. And when I was talking to my coach before the day of the race in Hamburg, just 2 weeks ago, he just kind of said, look, like, I think 208 is it's the new 211. So let's just try and normalize it. Let's think we can do it. And let's kind of give it a red hot crack. Whereas I think for a few years there, it was like no one spoke about it. So therefore, it wasn't even on people's minds. Like Liam's a great example. He was running consistently 2:11s, 2:12s, and then Brett and Pat lowered it. So therefore, Liam thought, oh, if they've done it, there's no reason why I can't.
Do you think too? This just came to my mind actually. The athletes potentially not working as much these days too, having more time to actually act and train like a professional.
Yeah, I think that definitely impacts it. And you can make good money from marathons. And if you play your cards right and go over and do New York, you can earn a bit of money, and then that way you can not work for the next 6 months and really focus on your training. So I think that does have a big influence, definitely.
And the other thing too, we can look at the athletes, but is there someone in Australian running, that's a figure? I'm thinking of like a coach or a figure like a Steve Montegatti figure or Brett, Benita Willis, kind of a figure that has sort of overseen or brought up ideas and got into somehow more of a widespread range of athletes in what they think and has influenced running in a positive way as well? Or is it so individual with the coaches, do you think?
It's super individual. Like, I've spoken to Brett about this and all these marathon builds, it's slightly different. Like, heaps of people are throwing around saying, oh, like Deeks and Mona, they used to always run hilly long runs. Used to always do 2.5 hours every week and this kind of stuff. And in some of Brett's builds, they've all been different. And it's like, he can't. Yeah. So it's, I not that I know of. And I think it's quite individual as to what the different coaches do and all the different builds. Like, my build for Hamburg was probably 7 weeks, which is a really, really short marathon build. And it's the best I've felt. And I'd do that again. Whereas you asked Brett what his build was, and it was probably 12 weeks or something like that. So it's, yeah, it's all very individualized. And yeah, Mona's been great, but I don't think that he's passed on any of that information in a group setting or anything like that.
Yeah, and speaking of hills, though, do you think runners have actually run more hills? The runners we've just listed, I've listed, have been hill running more in the last 5 years?
I'm a really big fan of hills. I couldn't tell you about the others. I don't really follow their training that closely, but it's probably something that the old timers did a lot, and I do see value in it. But I think it's all about making sure you're not doing too much. And hills are if you're going into a Sunday long run tired, and hills are a great way to make you even more tired. So it's probably just listening to your body and not going, oh, okay, this is harder, so therefore it's better. And I actually think less is more, and just being a little bit more conservative, I think.
Yeah, excellent. Hey, speaking of hills on a Sunday or whatever that may be, let's look quickly at your training week, because it can vary a bit too across Australia, Victoria versus Queensland as well, when those sessions and long runs lie within the week. What's worked for you, particularly if let's sort of go back before the Hamburg Marathon. What did your week look like, and did you tweak anything leading up to that event that was part of, you know, I hate to point to one magic recipe or part of a recipe that leads to a result, but what did the week look like leading into that race to produce such a great result?
Yeah, so I actually ran less, believe it or not. So normally in my marathon build, I'm about 180K a week, whereas I think I topped out at probably 170, 172 or something like that. And the biggest thing I changed was we would have kind of three good weeks, and then we'd have a down week where we'd drop that to about 140. So that was a big change. In terms of my running week, it would be Monday, I'd just do an hour. Tuesday would be my kind of like VO2 session. So I'd focus a lot on kind of 5K, 10K stuff. I'd probably do it about 8 or 10K of work, so classic 8x K, something like that. And I really practice on running fast. Wednesday would be my midweek long, which was a lot shorter than normal. It was probably only hour 40, hour 30, which is 17, 18K. Thursday, another easy hour. Friday would be my big marathon session. So that's kind of, yeah, anywhere between 20, 25K, mostly at marathon pace. And then Saturday, another easy hour. And then Sunday was always 2.5 hours for me. So I'd add in a few doubles here and there, but there was actually a lot less doubles than what I had been doing. And yeah, overall, there was a lot less running week to week, and a few little easy elliptical doubles, which was just half an hour. But yeah, I've been rolling that Tuesday, Friday, Sunday long run for the last probably 6 years. I find it works quite well with me. I used to do the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and I just found it a bit too much with work and that kind of stuff. So I like doing the Tuesday, Friday.
Yeah, and that's you spoke about that sort of down week every 3-4 weeks, which some runners do. I just think there's a lot of runners who are quite frightened to do that, to sort of not hit that mileage they're constantly aiming for. Do you really think there's good value in doing that? And do you rock up that next week feeling literally mentally and physically quite fresh?
Yeah, so like it's not much, it's not down that much, but it's just a slightly different stimulus for your body. And it's quite nice. And I feel like, because I got a stress reaction in my femur as I was prepping for Fukuoka. And I think I just got caught in the trap of thinking, oh, I did 170K last week, so I'm going to do 170K this week. And then you just all of a sudden, all your weeks are the same and you're not really absorbing that training. So it was, I understand how it can be difficult, but it's, I think it's really valuable for long term. And I think it means you can have good weeks, but not great weeks. And great weeks aren't sustainable, whereas good weeks are. So you'd rather have 2-3 months of good weeks rather than 2 or 3 great weeks. Because often after a great week, you're tired, you get injured, you get sick or something like that. So,
yeah, fair enough. And before we get to any mental application stuff, when we spoke off air about talking about your work with a psychologist and that psychology part of things, the Norwegian threshold method, that's been sort of thrown about in Australia, it's come into Australia in the last few months to 6 months. Have you heard much about that? Have you thought about or have you tried anything to do with that? And essentially, for listeners who don't know much about it, it's like a double threshold within one day. That the threshold, by their definition, is probably a little bit slower than the Australian threshold, but it's about that speed endurance as opposed to that real quick stuff that seems to be working for some. Obviously, Ingebrigtsen's famous for part of this method, but any thoughts there, Andy?
Yeah, it's like the theory of it definitely makes sense in that that threshold training is a lot safer, and you can get better return with lower injury risk. But really, I think it only works if you're a full-time athlete and you can do those two sessions a day. Whereas not many people in Australia are full-time runners where they can do those two sessions a day. And if you're only doing one of those sessions, I think it's a waste of time, in my opinion, because you're just not training hard enough. So, yeah, I feel like a lot of people have tried to replicate it and they're not full-time runners. And if you try and do a session in the morning and then you go to work and then you do a session in the afternoon, it's just too much. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I find it funny how much people just obsess over it. But I don't know, it keeps things interesting. I think the Ingebrigtsens are good for the sport. But it's, yeah, I do laugh when people do it and then they've never even had any lactate testing. So they're really just guessing. And probably a lot of people are using like heart rate monitors on their wrist, which is so inaccurate. So it's, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's many ways to skin a cat, but I don't think I'll be changing to that methodology anytime soon.
Yeah, there's a lot of things out there at the moment, isn't there, with this running boom in Australia? A lot of, like we mentioned about just earlier, like a magic button to press, a gadget, an ice bath, a certain type of run, or what you wear, or these things that are going to change things quite instantly. It's similar down there in Victoria that running's these bigger sort of run groups, not so much led by a coach or qualified person specifically making programs and sort of leading the way in that sort of manner, but more so just people meeting up to run.
Yeah, run clubs are massive down here and it's great to see. And like, it's funny on Strava, I've had like school friends start following me on Strava, which is quite funny because back in school they were never running and it's really good to see that they found the sport. And I'm all for it. And it's, it's good. Like I've been running around Bendigo for years and I used to do some of the loops and I'd never see a single runner. Whereas now I'm bumping into runners all the time. So I quite like it. Hopefully they stick at it, but it does make it hard for the general punter trying to get a spot at Gold Coast and Melbourne marathons because they sell out, which is something that that I'm still wrapping my head around because a lot of people I coach, like they're preparing for Gold Coast and it's like they had to enter at the start of the year and even Melbourne I think is nearly sold out at the moment. So it's definitely a different running world now where it's you need to kind of plan ahead rather than you can't just sign up. Like some people used to sign up 2 or 3 weeks before the race, whereas that just wouldn't happen now.
Yeah, and I've got a few mates at work actually who've run for far less time of me, only for a year or so, and there in the marathon for the Gold Coast. I've unfortunately got the 10K coming up because I missed the entry for the half marathon, but the Brisbane Marathon too, which is not, if I'm being as polite as I can, not the greatest marathon out there or event, yep. But it's good to see though, it has sold out the marathon there in Brisbane. But it's, yeah, the times are changing with that. But let's move on to the mental side of things, because I sent you through a list of things to talk about this morning, Andy, and you came back with one bit of feedback, and that was that I wanted to talk about my work with a psychologist. And I think it's a good talking point, because there'd be a lot of runners still now, and obviously the mental side of things, both in running and everyday life, has really started to pick up in the last 5 years, particularly. How has that looked for you as an athlete? And when did you start getting onto your psychologist or psychologists?
Yeah, I've only got one. So I started working with, his name's Ed Barlow. I knew it was a space that I probably could get better at. And I just think it's something that not many people put that much time into, whereas we practice our fitness and that so much, and we don't work on our brain. So I was keen to learn more. He actually came up to our school and presented to our kids, which was how I met him. We got along really well, and yeah, been catching up with him a fair bit of late. And he's been great. Like he's the one of the first people I talk to after a race. Probably one of the last people I talk to before a race as well. And he's really jumped on board and has been a great help for me. Probably one of the biggest things he's helped me with is self-belief, and just understanding that the mind will think certain things, and it's doing that to protect you in a way. So if you do fail, it's not as such a high fall from grace, I suppose, but it's not getting rid of those thoughts. It's more so just knowing that that's what the brain does, and trying to normalize them. So therefore those thoughts that you have during a race, when you're at the 30K mark of a marathon, and you're like, oh shit, can I finish this? And your mind starts to think all these negative thoughts. That's just your brain protecting yourself. So that's helped a lot. And then when I came back from an injury, I was, as you straight away think that negative thoughts, that was my one good chance to run a good time, and oh, it's going to be really tight for this Hamburg marathon and all that kind of stuff. Whereas he kind of changed the thinking, and I think that's why I ran so well in Hamburg. And it was like, wow, how do you know that this is a bad thing? Like, you don't know if it is or it isn't. It's definitely in my marathon build. I was probably chatting to him. We'll just call up and have Zooms probably once a week, and talk through some different things and come up with an A and a B game, and come up with some anchors for when that mind does wander. And I couldn't imagine not had the success I've had over the last few years without him. He's played a critical role. So yeah, very lucky to have access to him.
Yeah, my next question is, had you seen a general psychologist prior to the sports psychologist, and is he specific to running? And how does the session actually look? Does he touch into the everyday life affecting running, or is it very much running focused?
Yeah, so I went straight to him, so I didn't go to a general psychologist. So Ed used to play AFL, and he's worked with a range of different athletes. I was the first runner, but he's actually training to do an Ironman at the moment. So he gets a little bit of running, but he's really good. He asked me questions of, how are you feeling during this race? What does this feel like when you're running your best? How does that feel? Is it your feet feel light? Do they feel heavy? So he's learning along the way, which is great. And a session, it's quite strange. Just talk for the first 20 minutes. I know there's some purpose behind it, but it's just very lighthearted talking. He kind of knows my life at the moment. He knows my life stress. He knows things that we've spoken about in the past week that were giving me issues or things like that, or if there was certain sessions I was nervous about or I struggled with. And then I'll just kind of talk about, he'll always have some things he wants me to work on. And then during that week, I'll try and work on those things and I'll report back to him. And our conversations just go in many different ways. It's quite unstructured. I know he might say the opposite. He'll say, no, it's deliberately like that, but it's just a lot of talking. It's actually quite fatiguing. I kind of finish a 20, 30 minute session and it feels like you've just spoken a lot for the last 20 minutes. And he asked some pretty deep questions, which are actually sometimes quite hard to answer. So it's quite different, but it's definitely something that I really recommend to anyone wanting to improve their performance.
Yeah, I want to know too if you do know the other athletes, say the other guys around you in the marathon at the moment, are they seeing psychologists? Do they What's the access like to if they're not, if they are two elite Australian runners, both male, female, is there some kind of lure or any incentive financially or even, I don't know, in a persuasive way to get these athletes on board with psychologists?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't receive any support or funding or anything. So this is purely on my own expense. But I've been really lucky that Ed's been he's been part of the journey. So he's really helped me out there. So I think through the VIS there is a sports psych there. So the likes of like Brett would have access to them. Sinead would as well. I'm not sure if they use them. But in a way, I see it as a bit of a, it's like a secret weapon, because I know that a lot of people don't do this, and I feel like it's nearly like a bit of a cheat code in a way, in that it's kind of unlocking your full potential. So yeah, I've been honest with you, I have no idea who else uses one. I don't know personally of anyone that does. I was actually chatting with Ali Pashley. She did Hamburg, and she kind of saw me just going off on the phone talking to this Ed guy, and she was kind of asking some questions and she kind of showed a bit of interest. So I don't know if she's been involved with one in the past, but I think it's something that will become a lot more evident in the next few years.
If you were to pinpoint one thing, say as a runner, what would be the number one thing? Like, is it the mental aptitude to training? Is it the days leading up before a race? Is it within the race? What is the one thing, or has it been a spread of things that have improved mentally for you?
Yeah, probably the biggest thing is that in the race, like my mind really goes to some weird places, and I can often have some not negative, like I suppose negative in terms of like my self-confidence during the race. And that's probably the biggest improvement I've seen is kind of learning why the brain's thinking that, and then trying to find like what he calls it an anchor. So trying to find something that can get you back to that moment. And we kind of used a few different little cues to try to get me back into that moment, rather than thinking, oh, like I'm breathing heavier than the person I'm running with, they're faster than me, they're going to beat me kind of thing. So rather than going down that way, just kind of being okay with the initial thought, not trying to get caught up onto it, and then coming back to something in the moment.
Yeah, excellent. The internet's been a bit dodgy on your end in the last sort of 5 minutes, but we'll truck on. It looks pretty good right now. So I'm hopeful that we got most of that, just a few bits of lag as you spoke, but very insightful, Andy. And I'm hoping that the listeners can, even consider not just for everyday life, but even the ones who, and also not elite, considering sports psychologists that could assist them, particularly ones who become quite anxious out there. I want to get to some listener questions to finish. And there's some names on here I don't know. Potentially you do because they're quite personal questions, but I'll read a few out. This is my Instagram post that you shared. Thanks, mate, as well. And that potentially lured in those Melbourne-based or Victorian-based listeners. Let's have a look in here. I know this guy. He's a Queensland runner. Also hosts a podcast here in Brisbane. His name's Steve Woolley. He's asking, what is your greatest race best performance ever? Now, I've got two events obviously in mind for that answer, but what would you pick?
Greatest. Yeah, probably a bit of a surprise answer. There was last year before the no, a week after Hamburg Marathon, we had Gels Park Relays, which is like a AV relay race. And we were, I think we were coming third or fourth into the last leg. And I had Stewie McSwain just behind me. He was running the same leg as me. And yeah, we ended up winning the day. And it started rain, and it was just an epic day. So that's probably like greatest is an interesting one. It's like that's probably isn't my best performance, but that's what I look back on with a lot of fond memories because I was part of that team, and that was the first race we'd won. Yeah, as a team. So that was yeah, I look back on that one a lot, which a lot of listeners probably wouldn't expect that, and they would have heard of Gels Park from Brady banging on about it, but
Yes.
yeah, probably that one's up there, which is a bit surprising.
No, I love it. Hey, I think this guy's name's different on Instagram because I've heard him on the Inside Running podcast, actually. Speaking of Brady, Paddy Slow, that Paddy Stowe.
Nah, it is Paddy Stowe, but he is pretty slow. So we'll go with Paddy Slow.
And I have heard this in some capacity too, I think, on that very podcast. And he's asked, how do you handle the pressure of performing, even though it's a privilege?
Oh, he's got this line where he thinks pressure is a privilege and he raves about it. So this is a very in joke. And I don't know how to answer that will live up to his expectations. He'll get a good laugh out of that, and he just loves the fact that people like using his favorite quote.
All right, Daniel. This guy's name is, I don't know, maybe he's Italian. Daniel Antignani. Are you running the Melbourne Marathon? He wants to know.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually. I had a quick chat with my like Nick Bedeau, he's my manager today, just around race plans, and it's still very loose at the moment. I quite like to not really set anything in stone for the first few weeks post marathon and just enjoy kind of getting back to training. So I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to do. I would love to do Melbourne one year. I'd love to do a marathon where I don't have to travel overseas.
Yeah.
And do one in my local state would be pretty cool. So Melbourne's definitely on the agenda. I'm not sure about this year.
Awesome. Hey, lastly, we spoke about your store. I'm not sure early if you mentioned the opening date, but there's a guy on here, Hadrian. Does Andy have a date locked in for his new store's grand opening?
Yeah, it's a how long's a bit of string? It keeps changing. So it's within the next 2 weeks. So we want to make the opening a big deal, and we're just getting everything in line for that. So it will be coming very soon. So in the next 2 weeks. So if you're intrigued, keep an eye on Verve Running on Instagram, and we're gonna start posting a bit of a countdown clock for when it's gonna happen. So yeah, it's coming.
Great. And can a Brisbane guy like me or my listeners up here buy stuff online from your shop?
Yes, we will have an online store as well. So, for your hundreds of thousands of listeners up in Brisbane, we're more than happy to send you shoes.
Definitely not hundreds and thousands, but maybe I might get a few customers. I'd like to
Yeah,
finish, Andy, just
perfect.
moving forward then with your running. Speaking of Melbourne potentially being on the cards, doesn't seem like you're too keen, but what is on the agenda for this year and even looking 2, 3 years ahead?
I short term I'm really keen to do Gold Coast half. So that's not that far away. That will come around pretty quickly. I really want to have a crack at some different marathons. So if that's a I don't know a Berlin, Chicago, Valencia, something like that, where I can really try to run as fast as I can. And just enjoy some freedom of doing the marathons I want to do. Like that's my silver lining of not making the Olympics is I can this year is kind of as I want, I can do what I want to do and hopefully just do a few different marathons and get a little bit more experience. So that's what I'm keen to do. I'd really love to do Boston and New York at some stage. obviously you can't just do all these races in the 1 year. So this is going to take a little bit of time, but yeah, really keen just to race some more marathons.
And that's exciting too, mate. As we mentioned, 33 years old, turning 34. You're 33 this year.
Nah, 33 in April. So I actually had my birthday over in London. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So yeah, still several years on the cards. We look at, I think, Kipchoge, the previous world record holder. I think he was 37 when he broke the world record, set the record anyway for that point in time. So there's always promise, and the females here in Australia leading the way as well into their 40s. So I'm just so excited to, you know, and I think a lot of the listeners too, to see how you progress in the next few years and yeah, where it takes you. Obviously cross country is big down there, but it's the marathon, I think, that excites me and us. So yeah, thanks for your time tonight. We've learned a lot through those ideas, particularly around the mental side of things, but yeah, just how it works down there and with your training and your insight into the marathon itself.
No, thanks, Ollie. It's been good to chat. And yeah, the current women at the moment definitely give us no excuse as you start to get older. So it's exciting. I'm excited about the next few years. So yeah, hopefully I can run even faster and come back on again.
Cheers, mate. If you enjoyed listening to this episode or the Local Legend in Running podcast in general, please jump on Spotify, give it a rating. I'd much appreciate it. Thank you.